Pod Culture, episode 382, TARDIS Interruptus, volume 35.
This episode of Pod Culture, TARDIS Interruptus, is brought to you by Audible.com. Choose from over 100,000 titles and get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/podculture.
As if one episode of Pod Culture TARDIS Interruptus weren't enough, we are back with a part B, part two, or another volume in the series.
It's the twin podcast dilemma.
Yeah. Ooh.
Good.
That's a good
Very
one.
Very good.
Very good. Because in our first episode, we talked, you know, it started out as a discussion on Colin Baker's era as the Sixth Doctor. And then later on, as we're starting to close out, the close ended up being an interesting technical segment.
Yeah, it kind of went off.
So we're spinning that off into kind of its own show. So this is a TARDIS Interruptus, and
it's educational and fun.
Yeah, and it tangentially ties into that, but we didn't want you guys to miss it. So we're going to get into the show in just a minute, but first, who the hell we got in the room? I'm Brad.
I'm Christina.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Richard.
I'm Adam.
And we will be back with what is the longest yet most interesting closing segment of a Pod Culture episode. Actually, Pod Culture TARDIS Interruptus episode ever.
He's not the professor for nothing.
Just about time for the closing credits of the show and wrapping things up. But before we do, I've got some feedback from our listener.
Feedback.
And one of our favorites, Billy.
Hi, Billy.
See you at the Berry. He wasn't going to be around Friday night because, you know, he had to work or do something.
He was doing responsible things.
And or actually, I don't think he's going to be in chat Monday.
So, boo, Billy. That's okay.
All right. So he sent us a message on Facebook, facebook.com/TARDIS Interruptus. Okay, so I won't be around Friday night because of work, or Monday night, sadly. So I figure I'd pop in some thoughts on the Sixth Doctor on here. My only experience with the Sixth Doctor so far is a television adventure, The Vengeance on Varos, and the audiobook version of Attack of the Daleks. Mm-hmm. It's easy to see how the Sixth Doctor would have been seen as incredibly selfish and mean just from his television appearances. But the novelized versions give a bit more insight into his thoughts. He says something along the lines of, "I might be cranky and stuff, but I'm still the same man," towards Perry during Attack of the Daleks. That quote really summarizes a key part of the Doctor. Even as he changes, he still has knowledge and still has basic characteristics that will not change. He's the same person, but different. He still deserves respect, regardless of his boring voice or his crazy outfit. I'm definitely looking forward to having some fun so I can get a bit more exposure to Six, especially ones where I don't have to deal with Perry and her awful accent.
Woot! She can't help it.
And that's our buddy Billy, who's often in the chat room and has managed it before while we've been out of town.
Exactly. Yeah.
So thank you, Billy.
You know what? When he said the thing about I'm the same man, it reminded me of the girl who waited. that she's still Amy in the future, however many years, I forget how many years, 30 years
she waited. She looked pretty good for being 30 years later.
But she was crabby and bitchy and cranky and angry. But essentially the same woman.
Yeah, bitchy, angry, and crabby.
She's the same. But I mean, it's that same kind of thing where it's the you're still you, but those other aspects can, you know, float to the surface based on what's going on with you. And I think that's true, that he's still him. It's just that particular aspect is at the forefront this time.
Well, and it's why in other doctors you see little bits of previous incarnations.
Mm-hmm.
So. I'm just kind of wondering something that when you're reading what Billy's comment was when he said that he's only watched Vengeance on Varus, but was making a comment about how he's only had seen that one. But I think in the comment he mentions in terms of the episodes in the plural about how the Doctor's attitude is in the TV series. I'm wondering if you're picking up hearsay from other people and incorporating into his question about the Doctor's nature, it's like you got to kind of watch all of them really to see that eventually all that tapers off, all that bickering and stuff, because it's not just, I don't even think in Vengeance and Varus there's as much as, say, Twin Dilemma.
True. I've seen them both now, and I can agree with that.
It does taper off. And, you know, again, it goes back to what we were saying before. A lot of this stuff is written. And I think that's probably the big problem with listening to the audios now. And like when I was listening to Slipback, I noticed the difference in the way the Doctor treats Perry. Mm-hmm. That's just, you know, and I still stand by the fact that I think she's known the Doctor prior to the regeneration. I think she still likes him enough to stay with him. Because I think the friendship there
she
is strong enough to overlook a lot of that.
Every story, though, man.
Yeah, I think there's sometimes Perry can come across maybe as a little whiny for some reason. And I think that's written.
She huffs and puffs a lot.
Yeah.
Like she'll go.
But it's, I don't think it's.
Not as much as Amy, though.
Yeah, not that.
No.
Yeah.
No. Amy's but, every other word, she.
And as far as the accent, you know, I just assume. I hope that I don't know about the audience. I hope they just drop the American accent thing and just be Perry.
I've heard worse.
Just don't do it. Just be Perry.
When they're talking all like this and the gunfighters. Nicholas accent doesn't bother me too much.
Judas Kiss with Emma Thompson and Alan Rickman, two of the most accomplished. Genius stage and screen actors I've ever seen in my life, but they do the most hideous Southern American accents you have ever heard in your life. Like, what the hell?
You kind of have to be a natural to pull that out.
So, yeah, I can.
Shoot, girl, you just can't give no drawl and just say it's Southern.
I can
sympathize.
And
it doesn't sound right when you do it.
Exactly. Well, I'm just saying, you just don't do it.
I'm from Kentucky and I can't even do it.
No, I can't.
You're partly because you're just barefoot.
Pretty terrible.
Well, I'm city folk up here in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. Not it. No. Nah, I'm country. No. I'll tell you what. Yes, which
people? I feel bad for.
Let's get the discussion back on track.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Banjos play. Okay.
I just feel bad for both of them. I think they were victims of circumstance and. I feel bad for them as actors that they had all this kind of thrust upon them. And I would like to see them each in other things because I think I would appreciate them more.
So they really did have wickedness thrust upon them.
They did have wickedness thrust upon them.
Maybe they're just at the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong producer.
It was the wrong situation.
That let that. I mean, you know what? And I told Nick this one time. I said, you know, if you stick your name on a product and it goes out on television, do you not stop to look what goes out and not ask yourself, my God, this looks like crap or it doesn't make sense? I mean, I would think that a sensible person would just say, whoa, hold it. This is not going out. This is crap.
Well, maybe he was fine with it.
That's the thing. But that's the thing, too. I'm sure there are higher ups that probably disagreed. He just it's like, you know, unless you're ignoring them, you know, I mean, something's just.
No, the serious
thing. How much say do they have if they're not bankrolling it?
If you're not getting anything,
the producer is responsible for the programming.
Yeah.
So
yes,
if
but
he's
who's responsible for writing a check for
if,
the programming.
If he's well,
right.
It's all down to the budget thing.
How it was with them then. I mean, Jonathan Turner had the final say over the program. Now, the network could say, oh, we're not going to run this. But they didn't. Jonathan Turner was he's the guy that hires the script editor, who hires the script writers, who cast the people. And he's, I mean, he's in charge of Doctor
Who. That's a lot of authority to set precedent for who writes, who you pick to be the actors, everything else on down the line.
There's no balance of power.
So when it goes out and JNT's name is on it, it's got his stamp of approval.
From a production standpoint, your executive producer is really it. Now, unlike here in the States, you probably, you know, if you have somebody who is an underwriter or somebody who, like in a commercial, donates money to your program, depending on how it's worked out, unless they have actual license to say what you put in and what you don't, if you have money coming in as a sponsor, well, you know, you might benefit from that. But, you know, BBC, the corporation, at least it was the way I understand it, was the way it was back then. You got a budget. This is what you worked with. And the higher ups are the ones that can say yes or no to more money. Unless you ask. I don't know. I've known people who won't ask for more money because they assume it's automatically going to be a no.
Never hurts to ask.
Yeah. Well, and that's just it. So I kind of wonder, you know, you could at least update it to the specs of at least next gen. I'm sorry that I missed something. You can at least come away from that bland, minimalistic, overly bright studio look that started to look the same from Davison on out to McCoy. At least, thank God, they got more outdoors. I think it looks better.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Because they're definitely using different cameras. They're using film cameras or what. But
at least, the
frame rates were different.
Well, not so much issue with the frame rate issue, but the deal with using film would have been cheap. Film would have been more expensive. Video's cheap. You don't have to process it.
Right.
And I think Remembrance of the Dalek was the last one to even use any more film, the rest of it. But you know what the thing is?
With Trial of the Time Lord, everything was strictly video.
And you know what? The outdoor shots just look... I don't like outdoor on video. It looks weird. And it just looks like... a soap opera look.
But you also don't have that jump, which, to me is, you know, coming in as a new Whovian fan and having watched a slick produced program from the start, and of course, over the years, they've caught bits and pieces of Doctor Who. You don't have that jump in the middle of a story where it's obviously a film shot.
Well, a video shot.
And that's kind of jarring.
See, that's
really
the era, really? Though, too, because I've watched a lot of British stuff from that same era.
I'm sorry. Let's see. 1960s, 70s, and 80s. Film at 11. Nobody bitched and complained about that. Now, see, if you watch something that's completely on film, you're not going to know the darn difference.
Right.
Or video. But the problem is if you're not careful with quality control, then yeah, it's going to look a little odd because from what I understand, even going back to the Five Doctors, gee whiz, transferring the film to video wasn't done well to begin with. Mm-hmm. So if you're not paying attention, maybe it's going to look like shit because you're not taking care of it.
Well, I mean, that's
rush it
too. But I'm talking just the physical aspect of, you know, a TV show, you know, the higher budget TV shows, most of them still on film. You watch a daytime 30, soap, 35. It's obviously video.
Well, but that's just it. I think the aesthetic of the video, I don't think looks good outdoors. That's just my opinion. But I don't want it to look like a soap opera either, where it has that live, real-time look. Because
that's what it looks like when you jump from an outdoor scene.
Keep it all.
It's a higher frame rate.
It's a cost thing with the Beeb why they did it that way.
Oh, yeah.
Now, here in the States,
I understand completely why they did it.
We're not used to it here in the States because, generally speaking, our format was one or the other. Mm-hmm. Now, as a Dark Shadows guy, I can tell you that early years of Dark Shadows feature location footage as well. Mm-hmm. And they did the same thing. They pre-film the outside stuff, and they play it in to the video as it's being taped, just like Doctor Who does. Mm-hmm. The only thing is, with our generation, we haven't seen a lot of TV produced like that. And here in the States, once you got into the 70s, it didn't happen that much. You either did your soaps all on video and didn't make exteriors anymore because even Dark Shadows got away from doing location shooting. Or you would do like most television shows did, even back to the 60s here in the States, and you film it all. And even there are some shows that did videotape episodes and did film episodes for budget. They didn't mix them. So Yeah, over here we don't have, in our generation, we don't have enough to see where it was a normal thing at any particular time, for them.
Yeah, I guess I watched too much British stuff growing up because almost everything I watched that was English, it was that same film or video.
If something's presented to you as normal, mm-hmm. you don't question it. Mm-mm. And that's the way you watch it. Because when I started watching Doctor Who, I'm sorry, my eyes did not pick up, oh my God, that's on video. Oh my God, that's on film. No, I am so jarred.
Who knows it to start with?
Admittedly,
but now look at the
TV. Watching it on, 480p at best? TV. Well, we were watching it tonight on
a HD. 50
well, okay. HD all right. Let's see. Yeah. Here's the thing, though, which most people do not know. Black and white television actually carry a higher resolution than color.
I believe it.
Standard definition, because you don't have the color mask, which breaks up the definition anyway into the three component colors, a red, green, and blue. In black and white scanning, it's one electron beam going right across the face of the tube. It doesn't have to stop and hit individual holes aimed at a red beam, a blue green beam, and a green beam. So there's not those little patterns that you pick up when you magnify the lens. It's a straight across a scan. There's no interruption from signal to picture. That's why when they make the film prints, the Pertwee film copies is why they use black and white monitors, because you have a lower resolution pointing at a color monitor. Color is actually lesser definition than black and white.
When they do restoration work on these color episodes, they go to the black and white film transfer to use as their palette, if you will, and they add the color stuff because the black and white film print is actually crisper.
Well, and it retained everything that was presented on that screen, the red, the blue, and the green components reflected in the luminance pattern on the screen, because it wasn't. It would never have been possible on a color monitor and black and white film to do that.
Not just with color restorations. Huh. I'm talking about when they already have it and they go back to do a remaster, like with some of these recent Pertwee reissues. Of course, we're getting way off track, aren't
that's
we?
Okay. That's
all right. Oh, wow. Shit. But they end up, like when they did the new Inferno and they did the new Clause of Axis here in recent months, they actually, instead of remastering the color when they already had, they went back to the black and white and did an overlay and then the color restoration upon that.
Yeah, because it's
to make the picture sharper.
Right.
Because you get the straight lines all the way across. Of course, you talk more tech than I do, but that's why they use some of those black and white film prints to help in the color remastering, not just restoration of black and white shows.
You get a nicer base to build off of.
Right, right. So you get your nicer base with your black and white film copy, and then you use your color technologies to make to remaster the color aspect of your black and white picture.
I will tell you this, Jeff. I played back in his was Seeds of Death off the DVD, and I did notice this about the Blu-ray players. On the HD sets, there's a lot of effort apparently that went into make the video part from the things that were designed to be video, which were transcribed off of film. They went through and made the studio scenes to look like video and the film scenes to remain to look as film scenes, because that was the idea back then. There's video mixed in with film. When I go back and I looked at the DVD playback, it's because I think it's what's inherent in the progressive scanning from the DVDs. I find that the effect of film is completely lost. Anything that looks like film now flows like video. And if you go on MeTV and you watch an old episode that you know was shot on film, now it looks like it was shot on video. It completely destroys the temporal structure of the scanning, because what was interlaced is now made progressive, and it destroys the 3-2 pull-down, the conversion from film to video.
Wow.
You lose it.
Just when you thought the show couldn't get any geekier or nerdier.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I love it, though.
No,
it's great.
I'm just saying, that effect of film now looks like video. It doesn't look like film anymore. You don't have the judder, the little film movement. That's destroyed.
It's like when because the TV we have in the living room, we got it 6 months ago, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's 120 hertz television. Unless you go in and change the setting to not do the 120 hertz refresh rate, you will have
everything looks like a soap opera.
Everything looks like a soap opera.
I hate that. I really hate that.
And it will drive you batshit insane.
And it looks awful when you get a movie like Casablanca or something like that, you know, is a classic black and white film.
Yeah, it gets rid of the nice.
It makes the image look smooth, and it's like, whoa, hold it. That looks awful.
You see, that's the whole thing about Doctor
Who. And it's the aesthetic.
What you were saying about the switching back and forth. I prefer all the film looks, all the film sequences. I mean, you look at Spearhead from Space, it looks fantastic.
Yeah, it's done
on film. Look at some of the stuff on video, like Peter Davison stuff, like Warriors of the Deep, which is one I go to a lot when I criticize the look of the 80s program, because everything is so harshly overlit.
Right.
And everything is so
white. It looks like a daytime soap opera.
That when you do it on video, you're exposing everything, and it's just too clean.
And you know what the biggest irony is? Is that New Who shot on HD treated to look like film. Funny. But you know what?
It goes back to what Ryan says about looking like having that warmth about it.
It actually works better to do it that way. But you know what? It's actually cheaper to run video anyway. But you don't really need to use film.
But technology is now, and technology is now altogether different. Yeah. When you go back to, even when you're talking about when they still did the split between the film and the studio, that stopped with Revelation of the Daleks when they came back the next year with Trial of the Time Lord, which was 1986.
Oh.
Everything was only video from that point out.
The Suntaran experiment, the two-part Baker, was all video.
It was all video.
Yeah.
That was the first time they the first time they did all video.
On location broadcast.
Was in Robot.
Right. I'm judging that one way is better or one way is better. I'm just saying
it's jarring.
It wouldn't be bad if it was filmed all on video or all on film. It's the cutting back and forth between the two that takes me out of the story a little bit.
See, it doesn't bother me.
To have that jolt.
It's one of those things you kind of get used to.
But you know, I would expect that on the DVDs, as much as they've all been cleaned up, I find it even less noticeable now. Now I have to look and say, depending on which episode, I go, was this a film sequence or was this? Because I think I had that issue with one of the Colin Baker ones. And I go, is that filmed or is that video? And I can't tell anymore
But are you watching on a standard def TV?
Standard def.
Okay. So that might
I can't tell the difference.
Right. That might be which, the difference.
I think the whole point. You want to get film to look what it is for its format. Maximum quality, a lot of stabilization. It because I think technically what the objective is with the restoration team is that film can match with
this
video.
Is the nerdiest damn segment.
I like
ever
it though. I never knew any of
that. I know it's awesome.
I think it's cool.
Because technology marches along, I think they got to the point where film can retain its quality without looking crappy, and you can marry it well with video. And I think the biggest difference between the film and the video, I think, has a lot to do with more color saturation.
Yes,
outdoors look a little bit warmer, they have a little more ethereal quality to it, where video is just kind of like straightforward.
Right.
It's like news would look stupid.
The lighting is just harsher.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, because you're not outside. You're more natural stuff.
But see, even lighting is an art for film and video. They're two completely different animals. I wish I could shoot 35. I'd love to get my hands on a camera. Wait, you know what? I got 8mm Bell & Howell. I probably could order some 8mm film, even though that would look crappier. But I'd love to learn to shoot film, develop it, light it. And
now you can shoot video and process it to look like film.
But see, looking like, I can tell what is fake. That's the bad part.
Sometimes it's better just to do it the old way.
But it's too expensive.
Yeah, film's expensive itself.
Do you remember Blair Witch Project? Mm-hmm. That whole brouhaha about how it was the best thing. I didn't know this, but they actually... I've known this has been done before, where you can shoot video, transfer to film, and then project it. I think it's one of those deals where you have to blow up to 35. But you know what? It is what it was. And nowadays, you have cameras that can shoot, I think it's called Red Cam.
Adam, you watching porn on your laptop or something over there?
Yeah. There's porn going there.
Yes, it's Doctor Who porn.
Porn!
But, I mean, you have these cameras that can shoot thousands of lines of resolution, and...
Doctor?
You can... do all the compositing you want, and then your last deal is you show it, you can transfer it to film. It's not a big deal, but now who needs films in the theater?
Right.
I mean, when I saw...
Now it's all going to 4K, buddy.
Actually, 4K, I think, already been stepped down. I don't know why.
I would love to have 4K TV, but that's a whole other Yeah, yeah, well, that's a whole other thing.
But anyway, back to who the
oh, really?
Doctor Who.
Well, it's kind of weird.
How did we get here? I don't even remember.
How did we get anywhere on this damn show?
It's the art form, though. It's not, it's not Doctor Who as, you know, it's the whole art form as a whole. And how everything connects.
I like the look of the new series, even though it's not done the old way. And I also like the old way, especially with the Hartnell and the Troughtons, because it feels comfortable. It feels very, and even the studio shooting is much more comfortable than the studio shooting of the Peter Davisons or the Colin Bakers. There's a sparseness, a blandness to it. The 60s stuff, I think, feels more comfortable. It feels like you're lived in. It's like an old shoe.
Now, what would be funny is if
some of that stuff was, you know, because the Lime Grove shoes are kind of small. Mm-hmm. I'd say more like the Pertwees and the Bakers, Tom's.
But still feel comfortable.
Yeah.
It's just that when you have a lot of space, I think sometimes you have a tendency not to actually fill it and utilize it. You don't feel comfortable.
Now, see, what I'd like to do with the new series, if they, as part of the anniversary celebration, shot a new series episode as a classic series episode.
God, you'd have to rehearse and record.
Yeah,
I don't think they wouldn't
like
be.
Like the video and
we
the,
talked.
And the film.
I talked to Nick about
the
that.
Stage.
If they do that, but you know, I kind of wonder if they would be prepared to do it the way.
Well, they're recreating the first Doctor console.
Yeah, this generation
room.
Would
just
room.
As you were just talking about, Brad. This generation doesn't know anything about the video and the color, or the video and the film. So they would watch it, and they'd be like, either be like, this
old
doesn't
folks.
Look right because it's this, and then it's this.
And it's like, well, there's a heritage to it. Get over it.
How can you settle for just any fellow when you look in his eyes? It's the doctor you see. Companion to a Time Lord is an odd job description. Like any thrill ride, everything is. When the doctor says, so long, you must learn life again. You might be a student, a nurse, or a stewardess. You might be just a clever girl who catches his eye. Your previous existence is inconsequential. When the doctor says, run, girl, you obey or you die. Oh, how can you settle for just any fellow when you look in his eye? It's the doctor you see. Companion to a Time Lord is an odd job description. Any thrill ride, everything ends when the doctor says, so long, you must start life again. And you never get snuggles, you never get kissed, an adorable smile, a sly look's all you get. He might hold your hand if you're stuck in a pit. When he says,
girl, I love you,
means you're not such a twig. Oh, how can you settle for just a devil when you look in his eye? It's the doctor you see. Companion to a Time Lord is an odd job description. Like any girl ride, everything ends. This is so long, you must start life again. How can you settle for just any fellow when you look in his eye? It's the doctor you see. Companion to a Time Lord is an odd job description. Like any thrill ride, everything ends when the doctor says, so long, you must start life again.
Hey, we're back. Taking a little break from the discussion on the sixth Doctor and his era and all the stuff that went on in front of the camera and behind the camera. Because it was a little bit of a controversial type of thing.
It was a tenuous couple
I would
of
say
years.
That Colin Baker is the type of doctor that either you like him or you don't.
You don't.
But Christine and I recently went on a trip, and we had some Whovian-related geekery.
You were with me.
I know.
You drove me.
I know.
Okay.
I drove you crazy.
That's true.
Right. But we had a little bit of a Whovian geekery
we
of sorts.
We had a freak out.
Mm-hmm.
I beg your pardon?
Went to a comic store, and I forget what it's called.
I want to say Kitty Collectibles. I don't think that's right, but I'll look it up.
But
it's in Berea, Ohio.
Yeah, one of the things that they have is a Doctor Who pinball machine.
Freaking awesome.
Who North America's got one. You can play it.
I
play it all the time.
Yeah, it is fucking awesome.
Awesome.
And when we got back, you know, we looked it up, and I played it. You know, it was like a buck or something.
Like 75 cents.
You can play for free when you visit Who North America.
See, we need to go anyway.
I don't
look at the stuff.
But I played it and really enjoyed it. It's pretty much the classic series. It's got all seven Doctors. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, Sylvester's front and center on the cabinet. And it was a lot of fun. It was kind of hard, too. But I went on eBay when we got back to Christina's parents' house and said, I wonder how much one of these things cost. I'm just curious.
$5 billion.
$4,500 on eBay.
That's not too bad.
Oh, yeah. You know, we're not exactly poor, but we're not $4,500.
For $4,500, I will send you a postcard.
It's a little steep.
Right.
Where I'll be spending a month.
I kind of did the next best thing. I got a flyer.
Oh, cool. Okay.
The machine.
I like that. It's about time.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's got like
that
specs
is neat.
And the view. Lever. Open it up. There's a... I actually probably want to get another one because it's a two-sided flyer and get a nice
that's awesome.
Nice thing to
you
mount
could use,
in.
You could use a, mount. You could
know,
use a photocopier.
Yeah, I know.
And scan it and print it out and hang it up.
But the other thing I got was, you know, there's all kinds of people who sell, you know, parts to fix if your machine. So I bought a piece of backing plastic of art.
Okay, cool.
That's what that is.
With Daleks and
Daleks attacking the phone booth.
So you could make a collage of a shadow box.
Oh. I just thought it was kind of cool, and it was like $5-$10 or something.
Not bad.
No.
Well, that's kind of neat.
Yeah, it's kind of neat to have a little kind of piece of it, because I'm never going to have a Doctor Who pinball machine.
You know what? It'd be cool if you make like a little like a backlight
light box.
Light? Yes.
That would be cool.
Oh, yeah. That'd be
that
awesome.
Would be cool.
When?
So we did that, and that would have dozed from my phone. Sitting on her couch at her parents' couch.
On my grandma's couch that tried to kill me.
I broke your rib.
I broke my rib.
So, you know, we did that. So that was a couple of neat little Whovian geekery things. I posted some pictures on the Facebook page.
It's really heavy.
Of the pinball machine.
Yes.
And it's really nice. That it's would a be really cool. Nice pinball machine. But another thing,
I
guess.
I have a video of him playing it, so I will post that too.
Yeah.
I forgot
put
I had
that
video.
Up to YouTube or
I forgot.
And,
I'm sorry.
And
I forgot.
Link it to the page. But when we got back. Of course, I'm still unemployed at the moment. Actually, or technically employed by the state of Kentucky, I guess.
Poo.
Went to the comic shop, and the guy, you know, Doug at the comic shop, go to Comic Book World on Old Shep.
I love him.
Yeah. Doug's great. He's awesome. If you're a regular, he takes care of you. And I guess they got a couple little odd things in their shipment from Diamond that they get every week. It's like the only two things that they got. And he goes, I pulled these for you, you know, just see if you want them. There are these little, they're not action figures, but if you ever go to a bookstore and at the black by the counters, a big bookstore like Barnes & Noble or the late lamented Borders.
Bookstore? What's a bookstore?
Books a Million.
Yeah, or Books a Million.
Yeah.
Well, usually have those little kits that are like little mini books and stuff in there.
Things for your desk.
Yeah. Yes.
Like little
desk toys.
Yeah. Kinda.
And he got two Doctor Who themed ones. And he goes, you know, you want them, you're $7-$8 a piece, whatever they were. And he had two of them.
$30.
Yeah, $30, Nick, if you want to buy it.
He's nope. So mean.
Okay. But one, of course, is a light-up TARDIS.
It's adorable.
It, you know, it's only
awesome.
A few inches tall.
Aww.
And it's matched TARDIS, and it's really neat because it's got, like, the wood grain mold in it.
It's really
St.
nice.
John's ambulance badge. Pretty cool.
It's cute.
And then the other one is one Nick is. I have to keep an eye on. He's coveting.
Well, I want the TARDIS too, so I'll just.
I like TARDIS lights up. I think that's really cool. Yeah. That it lights up.
I got as many TARDIS as I have Daleks at home. So yeah,
it's a Dalek. It's actually a little bit taller than TARDIS. Funny enough,
giant.
And it's a gold Dalek, so it's not a Teletubby one.
Eggs. Yay.
But the little, I mean, it's super, for a little figure, it's super detailed.
It really is.
I mean, the eye stalk pivots. So does the little plunger arm and the little whisk. The whisk gun.
The little egg beater.
Egg beater gun. Yeah.
And it's kind of cool. They're neat little, neat little desk toys, and they usually find a home on Christina's desk.
It's getting very crowded, but I don't care.
It's all right. You got a couple of koalas there. And
a couple of koalas, a Phantom, a Rory, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, but that was some Whovian geekery that we found recently while we were out and about. And
I love Whovian geekery. There's a plethora of conventions coming up, and I need to save my pennies so I can buy stuff. I need to buy stuff.
And see people.
And go back and see the Fifth Doctor again.
I would very much like to say hello to the Fifth Doctor again, because he was lovely, and I'll be actually able to speak this time and not have laryngitis.
Well, you're those of you that have heard the interview that we did with him.
I know,
him.
But oh my God.
So that's just a little bit of our geek intel for this one. Let's get back into what?
No, I'm just trying to think if I had anything else geeky, like Doctor Who geeky. I don't think so.
Oswined out my phone last night.
I love her.
Playing around with it.
Oh, wait. What? I have a potential geeky thing that I'm thinking about buying, but I'm not sure yet.
That dress?
Yes. Email me if I should buy that dress.
Everybody tell her about the damn dress. I will give you the $20 to buy this damn dress.
I don't know.
You look nice in it.
My ass is not built for dresses, let me tell you.
Well, they can fix that.
There is Hot Topic has a shitload of Doctor Who stuff now.
Oh, that dress. I thought you were talking about the souffle girl dress.
Oh, that one's easy enough. But Hot Topic has an amazing line of Doctor Who stuff now. And they have this sheath kind of dress that's Dalek. It's a Dalek. It's got the black circles like the little eggs.
The little aesthetic beam locators.
Yeah. And it's adorable, and I don't know if I should buy it or not. But I would go to Hot Topic, everybody, and look at the stuff.
Hot Topic.
Yeah, the Hot Topic in the main mall near your parents' house.
I just got it now. Sorry. He was singing the Hot Pocket Jingle, the Hot Topic.
Sorry. I'm not being serious right now.
No, it's fine.
We never are on this show.
I can't.
We are the least serious Doctor Who podcast there is.
Well, I think sometimes when I try to be funny, it's the most inopportune or inappropriate moment.
No, that's the best part, because it's like a ninja. You're like a ninja. You can't hand them in.
I've been around one of my friends a little too long that when it's something inappropriate, and you know, I just said it, but I'm like, you know who I'm talking about. I say something just slightly off topic, and it's like, that's not funny. I've been conditioned for too long.
But since we're at, we're on the topic, listeners, I'm trying.
Hot topic.
Oh no,
hot topic.
I'm trying to put together. I'm thinking about putting together an Oswind dress outfit for Dragon Con. It's going to be hotter than hell, and a dress that I can wear for other things. I can pull off, you know, like her little red dress in Asylum. Like I could do that. Yeah. So, audience, I need it to be as accurate as possible. Hook me up. Thank you.
Just consider the type of fabric you're going to be wearing.
Exactly. That's the thing.
Post the link to the listing on the Facebook page.
I don't know if it's...
I think it's close. I'm trying to convince Christina that you don't have to get exactly there. The whole thing about cosplay is do the best you can.
But, there. The best I can. Therein lies the rub. The best I can is as close as humanly possible.
Yeah. No, it's as close as realistically possible.
If I'm going to do it, it's going to be right.
Humanly possible is hitting Jenna Louise Coleman over the head and stealing the dress.
Well, a couple of her dresses that she's worn on screen are actually available in stores, but they're just out of stock at the moment.
And very hideous.
And the shoe dropped.
No, anyway. Penny's in the air. But, no, to me, I believe in if you're going to do it right.
Yes.
Like, but don't be lazy about it. Do it right. Do the research. Do the hunting.
Anything worth doing is doing right.
I agree.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah.
I'm sorry. Start that shit. I will throw something at you and it won't be a dollar.
It's just a platitude that just seems like a blah, blah, blah kind of thing.
Blah, blah, blah.
Okay, I think we've had enough geek and tell.
Yes.
Everybody email Christina at podculture.net and tell her to buy the dress and go as Oswin to Dragon Con.
Agreed.
Here's my box.
Well, I think we solved the question. Is this going to be one or two episodes?
Here, I'm going to get my box here. Let me tell you something about many new Who fans that I've come into contact with.
The new Who review?
They're coming right at you. They wear the badge of I'm a Doctor Who fan, but many of them have absolutely, positively no interest in checking out that history. So if you were to
I'm not surprised at all.
If you were to make a show that looked like the old show, the first question is, why does it look like
this?
They'd
be bitching.
Because they would have no idea because they didn't bother to go back and look at anything in all these years the show's been on again.
Because, like most youth, they don't care.
Well, and I'm not really going to get into a big huge
They may not care, but
that.
They may appreciate it.
They may, but
if
you
they
know,
would give it a try.
It seems also from the activity that I have with the Hooniverse is that a lot of the ages of the viewership these days is skewing younger. So,
well, that's what it's supposed to. It's a, in theory, it is a kid show.
It's a family show.
I don't know as if many of the fans that have come on board since 2005 would even have any real idea about the older, because the other thing you got to figure, people aren't showing the show much anymore. Mm-hmm. Even the BBC isn't really showing.
Oh, but
they're running recently.
So they don't really have a lot of exposure unless they go out and buy the DVDs.
But it's on Amazon.
And they are referencing
it's on Netflix streaming.
Yeah, potentially large franchise. If you looked at Star Trek, you can't tell me that Paramount wouldn't be pushing its ass to get the classic series out and selling it and making it available. Which, godly Bob Howdy, they show the new restored versions ad nauseum on TV. So I guess there is a market for it.
That's what I like about the Blu-rays, though. You can watch it either way.
But it's not so much how you watch it. It's the fact that it's even there.
Available.
The classic Doctor Who doesn't get pushed on TV. It's kind of like, I'm sorry, this is your biggest flagship, you know, because if it weren't for that, nobody would have come back to bring back Doctor Who. Because like I told Nick, if it were up to me now, knowing that all the viewers couldn't give a crap about the older show from whence it came, then maybe you start Eccleston as the first Doctor and say, hey, kiddies, guess what? Screw the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Get on with your old bit and leave the old folks alone. So bye-bye. Don't worry about it. I'm sorry.
I want to back up a bit. I don't want to give an impression that all new Who fiends are like that. You got to remember, those of you who haven't heard me talk on this program before, for all intents and purposes, I got in on this show in 2005 with Christopher Eccleston. And I went back and watched the show.
You didn't just drink the Kool-Aid. You drank all the Kool-Aid.
I'm not saying that I'm typical or atypical. I'm just saying that many fans that I've come across through conversation on the internet or whatever else, through the forum that I belong to, or people I speak to on the street and other people that I know that have picked up the show since it's come back, that tends to be a somewhat common practice, is that they don't go back to see the show because it's not just on TV, like you say. You got to buy the DVDs, and who's going to buy something they know blindly?
Expensive DVDs.
I don't want to make it come across that all new Who fans are like that, because that's not the case. But there are some out there that are like that, and I encourage you to give the other stuff a try.
And if you don't, I know the DVDs are not cheap, no matter where you get them. But for, you know, $10 a month or whatever, take a month and get Netflix or Amazon Prime. And just there's a fabulous sample of each Doctor on these streaming services. So for a very little amount of money and some of your time, you can have a sample of everybody.
I got Nick hooked on it by carefully selecting certain ones to get, because I know there are people who have never seen it before and they're at the point where they could have access to the new series first.
Mm-hmm.
I had to handpick because I know what people are going to say. Oh, that's stupid. It's either it's stupid and it's black and white, or it's a kiddie show, or, oh my God, it's so foreign, or it's science fiction. So there's going to be a number of reasons why somebody would not want to go back and watch. Mm-hmm. So I have to handpick to make sure that they're going to see the best first, because like with any show, you got your best shows and you got your crap shows.
We talked about Colin the same way. Here's the good ones, here's the bad ones.
And your first impression is important.
Now, we've talked about this topic before, and on the Facebook page, I gave Brad a list a long time ago, and I've given you, Adam, and other people homework lists.
Still have it.
So on the Facebook page, I've given a list of not necessarily the best of each Doctor, but ones typical of each Doctor.
Yeah.
So since we're way off topic and we're already talking about this as it is, if you go to the TARDIS Interruptus Facebook page, you can scroll back and you can see the list I give for each of the seven classic Doctors. To give you an idea of which ones you can kind of look at to give you a taste of what that Doctor's era is about. As I say, it's not necessarily my favorites of these Doctors or their best ones, even though most of them are pretty darn good shows. It's just, here's what they could be. Like with the first Doctor, I picked out an historical, and I picked out a future, and I picked out a present. These kinds of things. So you can get a feel. Because that's what Richard did with me. Here's a few typical adventures of each of these guys.
You know, I was just sitting here thinking, I really have to apologize for what seemed like a little bit of an outburst, because I didn't mean to make it sound like I'm taking this out on people who don't want to wouldn't want to make the effort to go back and look at the classic series. But I just had to think of it this way. The kids that start now, let's say 40 years from now, when another set of Doctor Who maybe reinvents itself and comes along, I guess they're going to be in my position too.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Because their classic is going to be kind of pushed behind, and they're going to look at it and say, well, why isn't it done like the way they did Matt Smith?
And kids then are going to be interesting. Who's Matt Smith?
Yeah. And I'm thinking, that's right, because they probably don't know, like kids say, they probably don't know Troughton and Hartnell. It's like, So I got to bite my tongue, because it all comes around in karma. So I can just sit back here, and then the new group, maybe 40 years from now, look back and say, oh, that was just in standard high definition? Well, we have ultra high super definition with multi 24 channel surround sound 3D.
40.
And they'll look back at and they'll look at the stuff we're watching now and say, and no, that's
smell-o-vision.
So dated.
We have holographic Doctor Who. You're all watching high definition?
And, hey.
That's like, passé.
They're, at least they're watching it.
We watch it
in
the
color? That's in color? You're kidding.
Yeah, exactly.
That beam directly into your face?
But I think like anything, like whether it's learning about, you know, history or learning about your family's ancestry, I believe it's worth knowing where something came from.
Know your roots.
To more appreciate what it is now. And you may not love the old stuff, but it's worth giving it a try.
I just don't want to come across as the fan, like, I guess, I forgot how Nick termed it, as the one that seems to like act like they're possessing something. I don't possess Doctor Who. And, I mean, while it seems...
It's dear to you.
It's meaningful for me because I've got it pretty much... Well, you know what? I never lived in Britain, and I didn't see it the day it was aired. But I asked myself, well, why do I have such a connection with the Troughton episode that was produced years before I existed? Really?
Mm-hmm.
So why do I have a possession for it?
It makes you happy.
And I'm embracing the new series without so much of a problem because now it's just incorporated as one show.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to split it.
Right.
And say classic
and new. Because he's still the Doctor, no matter when.
Still a continuation of that show. It is still that show.
Right.
There was just a big break.
What, a 15, 16-year break?
Yeah.
Wow, and it makes all the difference.
He was traveling the universe.
He was having issues.
And the time wars.
9 years between the TV movie and...
Well, the TV movie not being actually serious, but I mean from series to series.
Oh, yeah.
You had, what, 16 years or something? 89
to
2005?
2005.
Okay. That's an awful long time. And especially, I don't... you know what, come to think of it? I don't think anywhere during that time that I know of, I could be wrong, somebody tell me, I don't think it was airing on any PBS station that I know of, except for maybe in somewhere in Ohio. I think there might have been one station.
It was not Cleveland, because I did not see any of it. if it had been on, I'd have been on it.
Because
I watched everything I
could
find.
I thought I had seen it in a listing for one PBS station in Ohio, and I couldn't remember if my life depended on it.
Yeah, I mean, I watched every British thing I could possibly find growing up, and I wish I had had Doctor Who, because I think of it now, I'm like, where has this been all my life? Like, how did I live my whole life? How did I live my whole life and not watch this show? I mean, really? I've been missing out. That's why I'm trying to catch up on it now.
And you're doing a fine job.
I don't know. I might be out of my mind, but I think we were originally answering Billy's question. And
sorry, Billy. We got sidetracked.
Billy, I'm sorry.
We were trying to wrap up our final thoughts.
Yeah. That's quite all right. That's the charm of
Billy understands.
Pod culture, TARDIS, interrupt.
That's what we do.
We interrupt TARDISes all the time.
Okay, boys, I have a question for you.
Okay.
We played this game before, and I like this particular game.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to give Colin Baker any other companion besides Mel or Perry, who would you give him? Who would best suit him out of the companions?
Ooh. Oh.
Past or present?
Tegan.
Okay. Why?
Because she's a lot like him.
Okay.
She's a mouth on legs.
Good choice.
I think that, you know, it's kind of like when you have two powerful individuals of the same mind.
Yes.
Together,
mm-hmm.
You know, it can be a lot of fun. Sometimes the opposite things.
It's either going to be world peace or
World War Six.
Well, in the case of the Sixth Doctor and Tegan, I think that they would be good for each other because neither one is going to take crap off the other.
It's like the Master and Ronnie.
Like the Master and the Ronnie. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They. I think that they would have been kind of cool together.
Nobody else could slap the hand of the Master and walk away. Besides the Ronnie. Richard's going to pop. Tell.
Donna.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yes!
That is exactly.
But Donna.
Exactly what
I
was thinking.
I can't stand Donna. I've gone on record on this. She's probably my least favorite companion out of the new series.
With Colin?
Damn, I would love to see that.
I would love to see that.
Colin and Donna having a go at it with their bickering.
I would love
to see that.
Yeah.
She would take him down a couple notches and humble him.
She would.
More than Tegan would?
Oh yeah. Put Tegan and Nissa together. Jesus Christ. Put Donna and Tegan together.
He'd be weeping in no time.
He'd have to go shoot himself.
Well, you know, of course, Donna is so awesome. She'd go great with everybody.
I agree. Agreed.
I don't see.
Well, no, I'm just trying to think of her with William Hartnell.
I think he'd knock her with his cane.
I'd be great. It'd be so great.
I can see that.
So what do you think, Adam?
Yeah, no, I was thinking Donna.
You're thinking Donna also?
Yeah, I think we had the exact same brainwave
like
at the same time.
I think that's pretty much now the consensus all the way around.
Donna.
Because that would be
but
just,
Tegan too.
Yeah. That would be hilarious.
That'd be great.
I can just see that dynamic. It depends on which Colin you want.
Mm-hmm. Well, the basic Colin of, you know.
I think like the slipback Colin probably would work well with Tegan. I think the televised version of Colin where the doctor where he's really snobby, arrogant.
I'd pay money.
That would work well opposite Adana because
bring Adana a peg or two.
They would have it.
There
at
needs
each
to
other.
Be an audio drama. Get on it. Big Finish. Get on it.
Hey, I'm for it. I'd pay anything to hear that.
Seriously. Yep.
Jeez.
Okay. Now, really,
officially.
Final thoughts. Let's close this thing up.
Okay.
Because, man, have we gone on the geekiest of geeky tangents.
Yeah. I think so.
Well, yeah.
Final thoughts, Colin Baker.
Colin Baker, definitely. Give him a chance. Just watch it and just understand that it's not at its greatest moment in its history. It does have stories that are worth watching that are... just watch it and just keep in mind an open mind about him and just take it easy.
I wonder, because one of the things people always bring up about Colin's doctor is that damn coat because it's, well, fugly.
Yeah.
Wonder what happened because, you know, you've got the ability to control the color on your television set.
That's been, oh, that's
just watch it in black and white. Yeah.
On DVD, there's actually a segment, I think, where they recolor his jacket.
Nice.
Yeah, there's a feature on the Twin Dilemma DVD about costuming the Doctor himself.
Yeah, theoretically,
talk about all the Doctors up to that point.
Yeah, theoretically, that's possible. And also, there's a regeneration where they regenerate Colin's face on or over Sylvester McCoy's
Easter egg on the Time of the Ronnie DVD.
Nice.
Yeah, so those kind of things are possible.
He looked good in Peter Davison's outfit. I feel bad that he went from that to. It's tragic, but
yeah. Hey, I like Colin. I give him a chance, and I still stand up for him in spite of the quirks behind it. But I think he's one of my guys. So
Adam, what's your impression?
He's probably the doctor I know least, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And to see that, you know, and to hear all of this about him and all of that is helpful. And I'm warming up to him a little bit more because yeah. I hate that coat. That coat is ugly.
The Technicolor dream coat.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. This is when it starts singing.
It's an amazing
Technicolor. Like listing off all the
pants
like,
don't help either.
No.
It's just all bad.
But it's all pretty bad. But, you know, it's just the costume.
He was still cooking when he chose it. Like his brain was still cooking.
Yes.
Yeah. That was dude.
But he didn't have to keep it.
I know.
No.
Like no.
I just want Amy to say, was it a cry for help?
Yeah,
like she did in that in the in between scenes on the DVD when she talks about his bow tie.
Yeah,
really, is it a cry for help? Like that's exactly what I thought about the coat.
It is a cry anyway. Nick, what do you think?
Well, it's not one of my most loved eras of the show. I recognize, though, it's not Colin's fault. Colin's a great guy, and listen to his commentaries that they're on his DVDs, and they're very enlightening. And he's a funny guy. And when the show it's like any doctor, when the show was written well, then it's shown. When it was written badly, then it was not really all that watchable.
Very little latitude
with the Sixth Doctor's era. There are more shows of his. That I'm just kind of meh on than others. But, you know, it is what it is. And I know that's a lousy thing to say. It kind of sounds like a cop-out. But, it, you know, it's every doctor has their own stamp as far as how it's been portrayed, how it's been produced, how it's been written. And it's okay. I don't find, I mean, even when it comes to the Twin Dilemma and Time Lash, I don't find them so awful that I can't watch them. I still push through them. And there are occasionally times I'll be like, you know, I like to watch a Six Doctor show.
Mm-hmm.
But usually I'll go to the usual couple three
yeah.
that I like. Rather than say, I think I'll watch Time Lash. That just doesn't happen, you know. Unless Time Lash is next yeah. on the string of me watching him in a row, you know. Yeah. But, you know, it was a product of its own time. And unfortunately, things were kind of shifting. And I don't know, I'm getting long-winded about it now. And I should just say,
getting?
Like it. Yeah, I know.
Oh, boo.
I think we've been long-winded all night,
it wasn't,
my friend.
It wasn't really my yeah. era. But I do find a lot of positive things that did come out of it. Mm-hmm. I actually did like Perry. Not one of my favorite companions, but she was different enough to be her own character mm-hmm. without being, oh, well, she's just like so-and-so. I did like the introduction of the characters like the Ronnie and Sabalom Glitz and Syl. So certain things were brought to the table during those couple of years, too. Pretty good Cyberman story. Pretty good Dalek story. So even with the dodgy ones, there's something to like about them. So mm-hmm. I'm okay with it. Not a favorite era, but not my least favorite era either.
Mm-hmm.
Christina?
I'm sorry it took me so long to get to watching him. I think I had in my head that I had read and I had heard from so many people that, you know, he was a jerk and, well, the character that how he played and was forced to play the character was, a, you know, a jerky kind of guy. And I think that kind of made me not want to watch it. And I'm glad I finally did, and I'm sorry it took me so long, because I really do like him. And I kind of like the harshness. I kind of like that he doesn't suffer stupid questions. And even though I know that's the role of the companion, I kind of like that he, you know, he kind of called her out when she's being stupid. I kind of like that. But I like Colin Baker. I think he does a good job with what he had, and I'm looking forward to meeting him when he comes to Louisville next month.
Hopefully,
for Fandom Fest.
Hopefully he does make it to Fandom Fest.
I hope he does,
I'm looking
too.
Looking forward to it.
Okay. Along with John Barrowman.
It will make it three consecutive doctors for me now.
Yeah, shut up. I'm so jealous.
5, 6, and 7.
Yeah. I want to meet 8. When is 8 coming?
I don't know.
He's
I don't know.
Over now. And
my thoughts
the
on it
book.
Is I'll watch some more, you know, if for no other reason than to see Perry and Skinny
I might
outfits.
Have had to drag him to it, but he'll watch more now.
Because yowza.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Somebody's got
well,
a crush.
A lot of us, and a group of friends of mine, we tend to compare companions on what we call the Perry scale.
Perry scale.
The Perry scale of boobaliciousness.
Oh, my gosh.
So when a new companion comes in, let's say Jenna Louise Coleman comes in, then we would compare her on the Perry scale of hotness.
Where does she fall on the scale of hotness?
She falls pretty high.
Good.
But
damn
see,
it.
One thing that us guys have got in our little group is that Perry is the one that everybody is compared against.
She's got the boobies.
When it comes to,
because she has the biggest.
She full Perry.
When she's the full Perry. When it comes to, you know, how gorgeous is she? How attractive is she? Because
what's Jenna Louise Coleman?
And, you know, and here's the
0.9
thing.
0.9 Perry.
0.9 Perry.
She's close. She's maybe a 0.8.
0.85.
Because she's more cute than beautiful.
Oh, no, I think she's beautiful.
That, but, see, I would, I,
that's
I,
a whole
I,
other
I'm,
topic.
I, JLC he, ranks higher.
He has a theory about cute but, versus beautiful.
Yeah.
It's better to be cute because beautiful girls have an agenda.
I don't think so.
Whatever.
I
mean,
no, they do.
But I will
they
say this, something else about Nicola, in that she is still a
she
extremely gorgeous
is.
Woman. She is. She just gets better with age.
We saw her on the Doctor Who episode of Pointless, the game show, and she was gorgeous. Not Sarah, not Elizabeth Sladen gorgeous, but she was gorgeous. And it was just cool to see her, the first time to see her in action, it was as herself on the game show. And then I saw Perry. So it was neat to see her first. You know, I didn't have
and she's sweet and charming. And,
I bet.
And she's wonderful.
She seems
so.
Like she would be.
Much love for Nicola.
She's aged much better than some other ladies from that
you
era.
You leave Joel Grant alone.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my yikes. God.
You leave her alone.
Like the Joker.
She's adorable.
Wow.
Sweetie Pie.
All right. I think this has been the longest closing segment ever.
We're tired. Wow.
Yeah, thank you, Richard.
I thought we were going to fill out some time so we could do it.
Well, we just made a whole episode out of this.
You might actually have to edit. It'll be okay.
The whole episode is the freaking closing segment. Okay. All right. That note, tune again next month for TARDIS Interruptus on the 7th. Doctor.
Boy. Nice.
Professor.
We're out of here.
Cheers.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
We gone.
If you want to reach us here at Pod Culture Central, there are a few different ways.
You can email us, feedback@podculture.net.
Call our voicemail line, 812-672-4763. That is 812-672-4POD.
Comment on the website, podculture.com.
Let us know how we're doing and what you'd like to hear on the show. We'd love to hear from you.
Pod Culture.
Equal opportunity geekness.